I'm going to pray, and then we're going to have a look at Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21, which is on the inside of the notice sheet here. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool! This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God."
Lily Allen's song, "The Fear," is a brilliant satire on the preoccupation of our modern society with self-esteem and consumerism. Some people look a bit surprised that I listen to Lily Allen. Now, our longing to win the affection and admiration of others is skewered, isn't it? As Lily Allen sings, "Life's about film stars and less about mothers. It's all about fast cars and cussing each other, but it doesn't matter because I'm packing plastic, and that's what makes my life so effing fantastic." We were thinking last week, weren't we, about our natural sinful desire to look for approval from others, from those around us, rather than risk the mockery, or worse, that often comes with openly following Jesus Christ. Today we're thinking about the other big fear that Lily Allen's song opens up to us, the longing for financial and material prosperity. She sings, "I'm a weapon of massive consumption, and it's not my fault, it's how I'm programmed to function. I'll look at the sun and I'll look in the mirror, I'm on the right track, yeah, we're on to a winner." Now, whether or not we put it in exactly those terms, I'm sure we can all see in ourselves those twin desires, can't we? The desire for self-esteem, coming from fitting in with our peers, getting the respect and admiration of those around us, and for financial and material security. Am I right? Whether we're anxious or ambitious for those things just depends on whether we're an optimist or a pessimist. If we're a pessimist, we'll always be fearful of other people, and we'll always be worrying about money. If we're an optimist, we'll look forward to impressing others with our success and making ourselves prosperous through our hard work. Anxiety and ambition are just the negative and positive faces of the same basic desires, aren't they? Now, Jesus' teaching in Luke 12 warns us of the dangers of those seductive hopes and fears for security in our social standing, and the desire for material security and prosperity. For Jesus' disciples, as they go with him on the way to Jerusalem, where he's going to be mocked and flogged and killed, they need to prepare for the fact that if they're identified with Jesus Christ, that will jeopardize both their social standing and their material well-being. And so Jesus devotes a chapter's worth of teaching to preparing them and reorientating them to see that they have no need for fear and no need to be co-opted into the worldly assumptions of the culture around them. So whether you're here this lunchtime as a committed follower of Jesus Christ already, or like those in the crowd around him, looking in, weighing up what to make of Jesus and the Christian life, well, we need to hear his warnings and his encouragements to us. Last week, we heard his warning to be on your guard against a lack of transparency about our convictions because of peer pressure. today and next week, he turns his attention to our material situation. Again, in verse 15, we'll see that he says, watch out, be on your guard. This change in topic is triggered by a request from the crowd. Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Sadly, family breakdown is often triggered, isn't it, by materialism. And Jesus responds with a warning that our material situation isn't ultimate. Life doesn't consist in abundance of possessions. Greed and a preoccupation with our material situation can lead to all sorts of distortions and relationship breakdowns. Before he deals with the anxieties that come from our preoccupation with material circumstances, we'll look at that next week, Jesus deals first with the ambitions that lie behind those hopes and fears. And he tells a little story to demonstrate his point, doesn't he? Brian read it for us a minute ago. Most of our Bible translations call this the parable of the rich fool. But without Jesus' commentary around it, I wonder what we might have called it. I wonder whether we might not call it the story of the wise investor. Let me retell the story in an updated form. And as I do that, just think about whether we would call this person a fool or a wise man. A certain fairly well-off city professional was earning a good salary and healthy bonuses. He said, I know, instead of frittering it all away now, I'll use my full ISA entitlement, invest in some tracker funds, top up my pension, pay off my mortgage, and then I'll be set up for life. I'll be able to pay for my children's education, take some nice holidays, and I might even be able to retire early. What would you call that man? I think we would call him wise, wouldn't we? Shrewd. Careful. We admire people like this, don't we? Maybe you are someone like this. This is what the whole financial advice and personal investment industries are all about. This is what we'd encourage in our children. This man is a paragon of what our culture would call wisdom. What could possibly be wrong with it? And yet, as Jesus tells the story, God's verdict comes crashing in, doesn't it? In verse 20, you fool. You fool. As I reflected on the way Jesus tells the story, I think he intends us to see three aspects of the man's folly in particular. I wonder to what degree you share this man's folly. First of all, he was foolish about God. The Bible's definition of folly is saying there's no God. Now, we don't know whether this man would have said he believed in God, but he certainly acted as if there was no God, doesn't he? As if he was the only one that mattered in the whole world. He was a perfect model of 21st century Western individualism. Do you see that throughout the story, as Jesus tells it, he's totally self-absorbed? Did you notice that? Verse 17, he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain, and I'll say to myself, and so on. Just have a look at the diagram on the sheet there. This man is operating completely within his own bubble, isn't he? He seems to regard himself as a self-made man. I've earned it, I'll decide how to spend it. No acknowledgement that it's the ground that God has given him that's produced such a good crop. His inner dialogue is completely with himself, isn't it? He thought to himself, or more literally, he reasoned with himself. In verse 19, he'll say to himself. Well, I wonder where we do the same things. Do we instinctively plan as if there's no God? When we think about our finances, about our future, do we uncritically go along with the expectations of the world around us and our parents, our financial advisors? The assumption that our main ambition for our money is to maximise its return over the long term. The man in the story made a mistake at first base, didn't he? He reasoned with himself rather than seeking God's perspective. He doesn't seem to have opened his Bible to guide his priorities for his money. He doesn't seem to have prayed for God's wisdom or sought out wise counsel from other believers. The story of this rich fool is to warn us by his mistakes. We need to learn to plan prayerfully, humbly, with godly wisdom. The man's foolishness about God led on to two more specific areas of folly, about the two dimensions of this world, time and space, or matter, things. First of all, he was foolish about time. Do you see the contrast between the man's assumptions and God's perspectives? He says to himself, "You have plenty of grain laid up for many years." But God said to him, "This very night your life will be demanded from you." This very night. We often live, don't we, as if tomorrow and the medium term are the most important periods to be preoccupied by. Will I have a job in 3 months' time? Will I be able to afford to retire? Will I ever marry? And so on. That's the perspective of the person in the bubble, isn't it? The person who lives as if there's no God. C.S. Lewis says in the Screwtape Letters, he rightly identifies that God intends us to live today in the light of eternity. We mustn't neglect the future, the period of waiting between today and eternity. We need to manage our finances wisely, don't we, so that we can provide for ourselves and for our families. But we mustn't be preoccupied by the future, neither ambitious about it nor anxious about it. In contrast, the senior devil who's writing the Screwtape Letters advises his nephew, who's a junior devil, to try to get people's attention onto the future. "Thought about the future," he writes, "inflames hopes and fears." That's just what Jesus is saying in Luke 12. He says this: "Nearly all vices are rooted in the future. Gratitude looks to the past and love to the present. Fear, avarice, lust, and ambition look ahead." Therefore, the devil writes, "We want a whole race perpetually in pursuit of the rainbow's end, never honest, nor kind, nor happy now, but always using as mere fuel wherewith to heap the altar of the future every real gift which is offered them in the present." That's the rich fool, isn't it? That's our age that we're living in, isn't it? Heaping the blessing of the present onto the altar of the future. That's 21st century Western materialism. Oh, sure, for some there's instant gratification, but we're all more sensible than that, aren't we? How many of us are looking to the future, to tomorrow, next week, next year, 5 years' time, barely stopping to enjoy the blessings of the present, but looking forward to anticipate future blessings? I'd love a pound for every time someone said to me, "Oh, hopefully I'll have a bit more time in 2 weeks' time." I've said it myself, I say it all the time. I'm saving up for a dream holiday. I'm counting down the days to retirement. And God says, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you." So let's not let the devil preoccupy us with tomorrow or next year or 10 years' time. Of course we'll need to do a certain amount of sensible planning, but the key thing is making sure we're living rightly today in the light of eternity. I found it very helpful as I thought about this passage to realise that each day I need to go to bed with a clear conscience that if my life is demanded of me this very night, I spent my time and money today in a way that means I'm ready. That's a helpful test, maybe, isn't it? So we go to bed at night. Is my conscience clear? that I've spent my time and money today in a way that shows that I'm ready. So don't be foolish about time. Do the right thing today for eternity. The third thing the man was foolish about was about things. That was the principle that Jesus told the story to illustrate, wasn't it, in verse 15. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. No, a man's life consists in their standing with God on the day his life is demanded from him, verse 20. On that night, who will get what you've prepared for yourself? We can't take our possessions with us into the next life, can we? Even more than that, on the day our life is demanded from us, we discover that far from possessing many goods, we don't even possess our own lives. Do you see that? Our own lives can be demanded from us without warning, like a loan that's being called in early. So materialism, the desire to make ourselves secure and prosperous and happy by an accumulation of money and possessions, well, it's foolish, isn't it? Not just because it makes false assumptions about time, we don't know whether we'll ever live to enjoy those things, but it's also foolish because it makes false assumptions about the things themselves. We don't really possess things. We don't even really possess our own lives. But we're easily seduced and temporarily possessed by our own possessions until the day God demands our lives from us. Jesus says in verse 21, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God. He goes on to spell out a little bit more of what it means to be rich towards God at the end of next week's passage. If you've got your own Bible, it's verse 33. He says, sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So invest materially in the kingdom, Jesus says, in the time that we'll enjoy in the future. We must use our money today in ways that honour God, in ways that display wisdom about God, about time, about money. Now, I think there are two versions of the man's folly. I wonder which one you're prone to. The first version is most similar to the parable of the rich man himself. This is the person who arranges his life on the basis that there's no God, on the basis that he'll live to a ripe old age, and that enjoyment of material prosperity is his main objective in life. Maybe this person is in their 20s or 30s, and they're saving for that round the world gap year, or starting to save for a deposit to get on the property ladder. That's the property ladder to heaven on earth, I take it. Maybe this person is in their 40s or 50s, and they're putting as much as they can scrape together into their pension, building towards their retirement as their version of heaven on earth. But if any of you are fund managers, I take it you would never put your client's money into this kind of investment. Folly number one, it's risky because it assumes we're in control and there's no God. Folly number two, it's transitory. It depends on temporary future enjoyment, which might not even ever come. Folly number three, it offers pitiful rewards compared with the riches of heaven. That's the folly of the person who, whether or not they would say they believe in God, to all intents and purposes, lives and plans as if there's no God. There is another version of the rich man's folly, though, and we could maybe call this one the sanctified version, the holy version. This is where the person knows very well that there is a God. They're a committed Christian. But they're at a particular stage in their life where it makes sense to invest most of their money and their effort in the future, building their career, putting their money into the mortgage or whatever it might be. For them, they aren't aiming to build heaven on earth, but they're simply saying to themselves, if I just concentrate for the next few months, the next few years, on getting onto a stronger financial footing, then that could be a great platform to give more money and time and energy in the future to serving the kingdom. It sounds very good and wise, doesn't it? And no doubt it is right and wise to flex the balance between our financial giving and our saving for the future, depending on circumstances year by year. But I think this might just be the person that Jesus had in mind when he said, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." Self-dependence and material security are seductive. We might well start out with good motives. We may genuinely think that it's best to save now and give later, but Jesus warns us not to be seduced. The longer we go on in our working lives, the more likely it is that we'll find our contemporaries' living standards will rise almost unnoticed year by year. And so ours too will rise with the tide. We'll start allowing ourselves luxuries more and more often until they're a regular part of our lives. And then we start taking on other luxuries instead. Our good intentions to save now and to give in the future keep being postponed, as first we save for a deposit on our first home, then we're saving for our wedding, then it's for the children, then it's for our retirement. There will always be something else to defer giving for. Remember those principles. Do the right thing today for eternity. Invest materially in the kingdom. It might seem very sensible to invest now with a view to giving more later. But remember that any money given now is an investment. An investment in the life of the kingdom. Let me illustrate that with our own ministry here at the Moorgate Talks. There are lots of other ways that you can invest in the kingdom and give for God's work. But let me just illustrate from our own ministry. A small regular gift of, say, £10 a month today would be invested into employing more workers, producing more materials, getting the Christian message out to more people. We would hope and pray that more people would be more persuaded to follow Jesus more closely in 2011, and therefore that they would be giving more money, time and energy to the work of the kingdom in 2012, and so on. As more people are more rich towards God, we would anticipate that, all other things being equal, that would have a multiplier effect year on year. So £10 a month now is worth much more as a gift to Christian ministry than a much larger amount that someone might give if they don't get seduced by wealth in the meantime, some way down the line. Now, giving to the Moorgate Talks is just one of a number of ways that we can invest in the kingdom and be rich towards God. I hope at the very least that you're giving to your Sunday church as well. But my point is that it is an investment in itself. Let's not defer doing the right thing today for the sake of eternity, rather than following the agenda of the world with good intentions and being seduced by that rising living standard and never getting around to really investing in the kingdom. Now, maybe all this leaves you feeling a bit panicked. You might be thinking, how can I possibly ever afford to buy my own house or to retire or whatever it might be if I increase my giving now? Well, that's the topic of next week's talk. Our anxiety about our financial security. We'll see that we have every reason to trust God to provide for us. For now, though, let's just pray, shall we? A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Thank you, dear Lord God, that Jesus' teaching lays bare our own hearts, shows us where we're looking for security and for blessing and for happiness. Father, please would you guard us from living as if you don't exist, for living as if future material prosperity is what's really going to make us happy. Please, Father, show us our own motives and our own folly. And please teach us to be rich towards you. In Jesus' name, amen.